Don't count zero.
Ladies and gentlemen,
what's wrong?
It has been a while, but welcome to the Team Rocket Podcast. I'm Jesse. This is James.
Yeah, buddy. We out here again, I guess, doing stuff.
After a small hiatus, we are back. We are ready to torture your eardrums and make you question why you decide to give the internet and podcasts a listen.
Yep. It's going to be like hearing Cthulhu's voice. Your brain's going to shatter. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's
sounds like you're doing the snarling dragon.
Oh, my God. The snarling dragon. What the fuck?
You don't know what that is? You don't know what that is?
It sounds like a horrible masturbation position, if you want me to be frank.
I'll tell you when you get older what that is.
You mean when I'm an adult and have gone through puberty and my balls have dropped?
Yep, all that gets the best happen first.
Oh, Lord. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a nice welcome back show for you planned. Hopefully,
otherwise we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully
there'll be a lot of profanity and
oh yeah
stuffs.
Oh, we're going for stuffs. All the profanity. We're going for all the poop humor, all the dick and fart jokes,
all the butts. You can't forget all the butts.
All the butts. All the butts. But before we get into all the butts, first thing we did actually want to talk about today on our episode, Fallout 4. Fallout 4 got announced in a very wonderful trailer, in a very old-style trailer, reminiscent of all the intros to the previous Fallouts. And this one is taking place in Boston, in New England. This is wicked pissa.
It is going to be quite crazy because it's a dog. That's what I'm most excited about is a dog. And I have this like feeling they're going to pull I Am Legend and kill it. Like
I Am Legend. Or... I don't know. Wait a minute. Did the dog die in Call of Duty Ghosts or whatever?
I don't know. That game series sucks.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. That's right. I said it.
For those of you that have never played Fallout, it's an RPG franchise that dates back to the late 90s. I want to say 96, 97 was when the first one was released. It was originally published by Interplay, and it was developed by the former Black Isle team. They made two games, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, which were critically hailed. They were wonderful RPGs. Fantastic. And Black Isle was also the company that would later go on to make Baldur's Gate. So that you all understand the pedigree that's going into this.
Top down.
Fallout's premise was basically an alternate reality America where we advanced in technology, but we never got past quite 1950s culture.
Yeah.
And eventually we ended up going to nuclear war with the Russians, the Chinese, the whole
nine Reds.
Yeah, basically the world gets nuked. So citizens are sent to live in these vaults where they will stay until the world can be considered somewhat habitable again. The premise behind these, though, the vaults were actually designed as social experiments where certain things would happen that would be designed to test the populace. In the case of, say, Fallout New Vegas, Vault 21, which was the most prevalent one there, it was actually a fully functioning vault that had no issues with malfunctions. Everything went perfectly, but any disputes within the vault were handled by games of chance. So if two people were arguing over a debt collection, they would play like blackjack or something, or poker, and the winner of the hand would win the agreement, or would be the winner of said debt agreement. In fact, to make sure that this would be the case, in Vault 21, and this is all according to the Fallout Bible, I believe. They actually had a developer's Bible, I want to say. That all the people that were admitted into Vault 21 were known to have gambling addictions. And as a result, that culture was spread down through generations because, you know, people were expected to be in these vaults for at least a good 50 to 100 years. So, you know, there's going to be offspring, at least two generations worth of kids or two generations worth of offspring.
Yeah.
So by this point, you know, that's going to be what they know. Yeah, everything's working fine, but, we have a dispute. Oh, we're going to use gambling to solve it. Now, certain other vaults would have issues. Penny Arcade once did a series of comics, I think, at the release of Fallout 3 that joked about this. There was Vault 69, where it was 1,000 vault It was 1,000 person populace in the vault, but it was 999 women and one guy.
One man, yeah.
Coincidentally enough, Vault 68 was 999 men, one woman, or one woman. So
one woman.
One woman. And there goes our entire female listener base right there.
All one of them.
All one of them, yeah.
Ba-dum-bum.
But so anyway,
to our podcast, I swear we're not this bad all the time. No. I swear we're not.
This is what happens when we take a month hiatus. We forget, you know, what we're doing. We lose all sense of professionalism. It all goes out the window.
We never had that to begin with. Let's be fair.
Nonetheless, though, Fallout 4, it being developed by Bethesda, the Elder Scrolls guys, this takes it back on the East Coast, and we're going to the New England region with Boston. The trailer came out. They showed a lot of the landmarks with it, one of which is actually Fenway Stadium.
Which I was hyped as fuck about.
Fenway Park, yeah. Fenway. Apparently Fenway can survive the apocalypse. Who knew?
Hmm.
The big green monster lived.
I mean, that's what shielded everything from the nuclear radiation was the big green wall.
Oh, that'd be so appropriate. I'd be so happy.
It would. You find out it's made of, the whole stadium is made out of lead.
Oh, my God.
That's why they couldn't win any World Series for a while. It's the lead poisoning. Go figure.
It's all so clear now.
It was an Illuminati conspiracy from the beginning.
But no, I'm really looking forward to this. In particular, Bethesda, when they got the license for Fallout 3. You know, I was very skeptical about the game at first when it came out. I was very reluctant to touch it because I was one of the Black Isle peer. I was like, I loved the way Black Isle did their games. The 3/4 isometric, you know, kind of like a
Zelda-esque or Diablo. It was more like Diablo than Zelda.
I mean, non-combat was more like Diablo, but in combat it was very turn-based.
Yeah.
With that being said, though, you know, I was debating one day, but when I had a PS3, between buying Fallout 3 Game of the Year Edition and Alpha Protocol by BioWare. I don't know if it was by BioWare. I'm going to say Obsidian. I forget the company.
Doesn't matter. You made the right choice.
I did actually make the right choice. It turns out Fallout 3 came with all the DLC, and it was absolutely phenomenal. It was a wonderful game. And then Obsidian, the developer studio Obsidian, got the rights to make Fallout New Vegas. And a lot of the people behind Obsidian were the old Black Isle team who developed Fallout 1 and 2. So they took it back to the West Coast. They covered a lot of the things that, you know, it was like an extended sequel to Fallout 1 and 2, and I think they did really well with that. So this one's going back to Bethesda. It's going back on the East Coast. And I feel like when Bethesda made Fallout 3 and they took it to the East Coast, that was a great way for them to, you know, they could retain some of the Fallout-isms that came with the original two games, but it gave them the opportunity to also have a fresh start without, do something clean without necessarily infringing on the existing canon.
Yeah. They made a huge, 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 like, world building, a huge amount of world building, that series.
Oh, I mean, they had to. I mean, when they took it really onto the East Coast, I mean, the first thing they did was actually with the Brotherhood of Steel in Fallout 3. The Brotherhood of Steel was a paramilitary organization in Fallout 1 and 2 that, you know, were tasked with recovering and hoarding technology.
Yeah.
And they were a very inclusive group, you know. They were a very domineering group. Fallout 3 comes around, and there's a Brotherhood of Steel chapter that's made its way to the East Coast. And they've committed several things within the order that would be considered blasphemy to those on the West Coast, but to do it on the East Coast, they did it to survive. I think it was accepting normal citizens into their ranks, and it's like, we need to do this to survive or we're going to get exterminated. And funny enough, it works out very well for them.
That's how it always is.
When you look at the Brotherhood of Steel on the East Coast, they're actually thriving and doing very well, whereas on the West Coast, their numbers have only continued to dwindle and dwindle, and their influence has gotten less and less.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, I see Fallout 4 definitely bring. I would love to see them, you know, bring back the Brotherhood of Steel and see how far their influence has gotten, or how far their influence has traveled since Fallout 3. I want to see if they make any references to the Capital Wasteland. Mostly enough, what I really want them to do is I want them to have a perk or a trait at the very beginning of the game that will give everyone the worst New England Boston accents possible. This actually isn't a joke. With Fallout 2, if you And I think Fallout 1 and 2, I want to say it was more prevalent in 2. If you took like a really high luck stat, like you just shot the roof on luck, you would get a lot of these really weird encounters on the map. Mm. And just absolutely ridiculous stuff. They were throwbacks to pop culture, but they were just really strange, like aliens. Like you would come upon a UFO crash and you'd be able to grab energy weapons off of it, or you would encounter, I want to say, like a bunch of humans running on treadmills to power like a power station. It was just absolutely goofy shit like that. Fallout New Vegas had a trait that you could pick up at the very beginning, or a perk. I forget. I want to say it's trait, but
yeah, I think it's a trait.
Called Wild Wasteland, where it would change up the game in such a way where a lot of this goofy shit would happen. It was like playing, you were getting a lot of the same game experience, but there were just like these goofy call-outs, like these goofy references. It just made everything kind of wonky.
Hmm. Now, I'm going to have to try that now.
Now, grant you Fallout New Vegas, if you did not take that trait, you know, it was a very straightforward game. It had its dark humor, it had a lot of cool moments, but you didn't necessarily encounter that stuff. And I could certainly see them doing it with Fallout 4 in Boston, you know, just having it be a straightforward game. But I want them to have a trait called Wicked Pissa. I want it to make everything just horribly Boston.
South Boston. Yeah.
It's like there was a Control-Alt-Delete comic that I feel really just encapsulated the whole thing. And I thought it was just perfect. It's like, hey there, you cocksucker, you want to go get a fucking beer at the fucking bar later?
Boston.
It's like, sure, buddy, I'd like to get a fucking beer. But first, I got to go see this retarded fucking mute over there in the corner that owes me some fucking caps.
Nah, I think our boss says best. You want to eat some chocolate while you park the car? What? You want to do what?
So, yeah, I want there to be something in the game that makes everything just horribly, stereotypically Boston. And just like all the like South Boston isms, and I want to see if that'll happen. And I know if we have any listeners that from South Boston, we're going to be getting hate mail, but whatever.
Noma Garcia Pyra. What? What's his name? Noma. You know, the pitcher. Noma.
You know, I was gonna say, what year did Bucky fucking Dent ruin Boston's dreams in the World Series or in baseball?
I don't know. I want to say it was after the fuck. I don't know.
Oh man, I would like to hear some Bucky fucking Dent. That's coincidentally probably the most F bombs we've ever dropped in our podcast.
I think so. Because I think we counted once. We had like, we couldn't even do an episode in the first 10 seconds. You said fuck. You remember?
I think we're already up into double digits now. Thanks, Boston.
Yeah, you everything up.
You got us into fucking double digits waiting. Five digits. Way to go, buddy.
Way to go, buddy.
Even though I sit here and I have a Brady and a Gronkowski jersey just sitting right next to me.
I think clearly, technically it means you're playing devil's advocate at that point.
Clearly we know where my sports allegiance is.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were drinking a Sam Adams, that would make it even funnier.
Drinking a Newcastle, actually.
British fuck.
Yeah, I usually don't touch Samuel Adams until winter when they have their winter lager.
Is that the only one you like?
That actually is, yeah.
Huh.
I'm not a big fan of the Oktoberfest. It's weird.
It doesn't have enough of the spices in it. Some other places have better Oktoberfest, not going to lie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was theirs or Yingling's blueberry wheat the other day.
Yeah.
Oh my god, you could actually taste the blueberry. It was amazing. Wow, we got way off track.
We're already doing it.
Whatever.
Actually, one thing I would like to see with this Fallout, though, for little old Falloutisms, I want them to bring back the gun from Blade Runner. That gun.
Really?
Yeah. No, the 223 pistol from Fallout 1 and 2 that is then referred to as that gun in Fallout New Vegas. The Blade Runner gun.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the thing I was going to say, like, at the end of the trailer, the suit. You think that's going to come into play somewhere? You think that's going to be foreshadowing? You think it's just there for nostalgia purposes trailer?
I mean, that power armor has always been prevalent in Fallout, and I don't see them differing in Fallout 4.
He's not in it. Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. Never mind.
I mean, you're going to have that, and you're going to have an opportunity to wear it. Yeah, just like, you know, the dog has been traditionally referred to as dog meat from previous Fallout.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. They're going to I Am Legend him.
No, but see, the thing is, like, the dog has always been really prevalent, and is In Fallout 1, he had a reasonably high survival rate, but he wasn't very. It wasn't a very smart AI thing. Fallout 2, he kind of dragged off a bit. Fallout 3, however, Dogmeat had very ridiculous armor and hit points. Like, you really had to whittle him down.
Oh, just before we go on to the next subject, as a funny thing, when Bethesda made the Shivering Isles expansion for Elder Scrolls, in one of the missions, you get a dog that's a zombie dog named Dogmeat. Or it's a zombie dog in reference to that. Because, like, oh, yeah, I have this guard dog for you. He's just lying around back somewhere. And then when you complete the quest and he gives you the dog, it's a zombie dog.
I mean, that was the thing, is in Fallout 1, it was this really just raggedy-looking dog. But, I mean, it ends up being one of, like, your better companions. It was certainly one of the most memorable. It's about as closest to a pet companion as you get in the Fallout series. No, Dogmeat is definitely, like, a Fallout mainstay. So I think to have Dogmeat in Fallout 4 is just, it's a foregone conclusion. There was actually a perk you could get in Fallout 3 called Puppies, where if you Dogmeat died, it would instantly spawn a puppy in a specific location. Just a fully grown Dogmeat puppy that you just recruit. Aww. So you had like this never-ending armada of dogs. Dog companions.
That's
hilarious.
That's funny. I'm going to have to try that now. Yeah. I most definitely have to try that now.
Yeah. So, nonetheless, I am looking forward to Fallout 4. Again, you've got Ron Perlman doing voice work in the game again.
Yeah.
Which I think he even admitted on his own Twitter that it was one of the hardest kept secrets he's had, because he originally denied being involved. And then the trailer comes out and he's like, God, that was a really difficult secret to keep.
Man.
So, yeah. So I'm definitely, that's one of those games that's definitely on my to watch list, and obviously, and the word is it's going to be coming out this year. That's the funny thing.
I'll believe that when I see it.
I mean, given how the game looks, it seems like they're reasonably well along. It wouldn't shock me if it's out by the end of the year. Next year's a safe bet, but if they get it out before holiday this year, I'll be very impressed.
Yeah, I'm just saying, with the way the current gen is going, everything gets delayed for no reason, or just random reasons.
Keep in mind, this is Bethesda. All of those games, their games do have a tendency to come out very buggy, and I mean, some of those bugs are a part of their charm, but...
Like the flying dragons that fly upside down and backwards in Skyrim.
It's one of those things that would not shock me if the game came out earlier than expected, but we got some very goofy bugs out of it. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we will see. So let's move on to number two, bro.
That would be Konami. Oh, Konami, what the fuck?
You clearly are not in touch with your main demographic at all anymore.
Oh, my God. So for those of you that have not been following gaming news in the last month, Konami announced the cancellation of Silent Hills, the sequel to the Silent Hill franchise, that also had Guillermo del Toro and
Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus, thank you. Norman Reedus involved in it. Canceled, DOA, never head on arrival.
Yeah, which again is
literally,
like insane.
Literally deader than a zombie in The Walking Dead.
I mean, for like they had all this cool concept art that made one of the best games.
The best
to
demo.
Promote a game.
What was it, PT?
That
was
they made PT to promote the game and ended up being better than a lot of the full games that were out at the time. And they were just like, oh, by the way, we're done with this.
Apparently now a lot of word of this is because Kojima was involved with Silent Hills, and apparently Kojima has had a very vicious falling out with Konami.
Yeah, to the point they removed from a lot of the promotional material for Metal Gear Solid 5. He's gone. His name is gone from it. But still, like, and then their main focus, they want to focus on mobile gaming, like, then they did you read their half-hearted apology that they sent out later?
Yeah, they're like, we're going to be focusing on other things. But before we go any further, first off, if you're looking for longevity for a company, I can't say mobile is an entire bad way to go. In all fairness to it, mobile games have a very cheap production cycle. You can have them up within very, very quickly. There's not a high dev cycle on it. They're not meant... If a mobile game lasts very long, that's a miracle. Most mobile games aren't meant... They don't have a long life cycle on them, you know?
Yeah, those sounds like it's digestible content, or easily digestible content, but the problem is most of the games that Konami is known for, i.e. Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill, I don't think they would translate well into mobile games. So they're going to have to make like brand new IPs, basically.
Well, I mean, here's the funny thing. They have an entire rhythm game department. In particular, Konami has already experimented on the mobile platform with games like Jukebeat, which is a derivative of its Jukebeat arcade game. And I've had the chance to play both of them, both the arcade format and the mobile.
Yeah.
In this particular instance, I actually have Jukebeat on my phone. It's actually it's a nice little time sink, and I have certainly bought song packs off of it. It does its job well. There was also ReflectBeat, which was put on the mobile platform as well. ReflectBeat was a little trickier for me, but I know people that do play it and have thought for, and have dedicated time to it. It's a fun game.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like in terms of big things, like digestible content, like again, Metal Gear Solid, Silent Hill, anything like that, it's not going to be an easy thing to translate unless you make like a side thing, like with Metal Gear Acid, where you turn into something like entirely different. But even in their own apology, you're like, yeah, we understand that we've heard a lot of your feelings. We'll still make some console games. What our main thing right now is going to be mobile.
Yeah.
Which again is like, but if you're like me and it's like, I use my phone for other stuff. And if I wanted to play a mobile game, I'm going to stick with Nintendo because...
Well, I mean, even then, Nintendo's starting to get into the mobile market.
That was the thing I wanted to talk about. But yeah, they're developing IPs based off of their main IPs. And then, like, so it's not going to be, like, going to be able to play Super Mario Sunshine on your phone.
Yeah.
It's going to be, Sega did the same thing with Sonic Dash. It's like, it's a Sonic-ish game is what I'm afraid of. It's like, oh, this game is like Sonic. It has Sonic in it. But at the same time, it's not the real experience of the game. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that goes, but oh my god, they shot themselves in the foot. Because again, the American market is still consoles.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Well, I mean, what I would actually say is keep in mind that there are companies that have made good on the mobile market. Square Enix is a prime example with a Final Fantasy Record Keeper that just came out in the mobile market and has apparently done very, very well.
Is it available in the States? Or is it just like a demo?
No, it's available stateside. They've also released, you know, several of their games mobily. Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3,
Tactics.
Tactics in particular. God damn.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it's just certain forms of things can exist, or certain versions of the IP can exist, but can a true game of that caliber, certain series, can they exist in a true mobile market with a non-traditional controller? So like, you can play a tactical game by just clicking the screen and clicking icons and stuff, but what about the stuff that requires more reaction than that? Could you do that comfortably is the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think, I think Konami has certain licenses that they can use that they could really bring to the mobile platform and make money off of. Again, I think their music game department, Bimani, could actually benefit from there. Certainly games like ReflectBeat, like Jukebeat. You know,
Poppin' Music actually comes to mind as you bring that up.
Like a dumbed down version of Poppin' you could probably do. 2DX is notorious for being very difficult. I don't think that would translate over as well. Actually, Poppin' is notoriously difficult. But I feel like in a weird way you could dumb down Poppin'.
You really could. Yes. Just make it four buttons.
Oh yeah.
And then just put them across the bottom of the screen, make it where it's horizontal screen only. It could work. It'd be kind of hard, like you said, and it'd have to be dumbed down a little bit.
I mean, but I mean, again, the production cycle certainly wouldn't be that intense, and you have a big music library to work off of. So I mean, I feel like you could definitely make that work.
White Lovers.
Oh god. Oh my god.
It's Dubstep Remix, Black Hades. But yeah, like there's some things you could do, but like again, on the whole, just with Konami, like they don't really have that many big IPs I think could work for them. Like,
I mean, I would even say a bigger question is Konami, are they bleeding so much money that they're trying to survive?
Yeah.
Are they in survival territory? Because if they are, certainly this is one way to do it, but you have to make sure you use your IPs properly at that
point. That's what I'm saying. Like, just think of it this way. If they were willing to make a movie-quality Silent Hill, that's literally probably $100 million gone. Maybe. I mean,
but also keep in mind, that was one of the few franchises that they were willing to put on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even do that for Metal Gear. Metal Gear never got to the big screen. But meanwhile, you know, Silent Hill came around at the perfect time. You know, the horror movie genre was doing really well during the mid-2000s.
Yeah, to be fair, the first Silent Hill was actually one of the best video game movies ever because it was pretty true to the source material to a point.
Yeah, it was remarkable. To be fair, I've never seen Silent Hill 2. That's like on my list of things that I need to sit down and watch. But I do remember Silent Hill 1 being fairly reasonably true enough to its source material.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only thing they changed was, because it made sense from a psychological standpoint, the bond between James and Cheryl was more between the bond of a mother and their child, more so than a father and their child, so it made sense.
Yeah.
That was totally cool. It's like, oh, we'll just flip that and go from there.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's out of place, certainly.
But, yeah, like, as a whole, you're right. It's all about them using the IPs that they have to the best of the ability of that IP. Otherwise, they're going to fuck themselves.
And, I mean, it's not like they don't have older IPs to work with. You have the Gradius IP. You have the Mystical Ninja.
Twinbee.
Poppin' Twinbee. I mean, you have... There's a decent amount of Contra, I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, you can't forget Contra. If you're going to include Gradius, don't forget Contra. Don't forget Gradius. I mean, you have a decent number of titles they can work with to make something... work. It's just a matter of adapting it to the mobile platform and getting people to play it, which, you know, can be done. It certainly doesn't take a long time, but it also has to be stuff that people are willing to play.
Yeah, so you have to make it something that people that it's willing to play. It has to be something that you can pitch to your marketing team to get them to get the commercials and the ads out for people to want to play it. So it's like a risk. It's a smaller risk, again, for like smaller countries like Japan, Germany, and some of the other European countries where mobile is big because the infrastructure supports it too.
But also, here's another thing. How much of a life cycle are you willing to put into it as well? Yeah. Because when you look at mobile games, like say Clash of Clans, Boom Beach, even Angry Birds, Flappy Bird, you know, how much of a life cycle do those really have?
Yeah,
like Angry Birds was a rarity. Like the fact that that game still even has some bit of life and interest in it to this day, you know, is astounding. Fruit Ninja. I mean, Infinity Blade.
Which made it
to arcade platforms. Say, Flappy Bird got put into an arcade variant. Those games, you know, they had an unusual sense of longevity. A lot of games do not. You know, even games like Jukebeat admittedly started as an arcade title, Jukebeat. And I'll say this, as far as my hands are concerned, Jukebeat on the mobile platform is a lot nicer on my hands than Jukebeat was.
I'd imagine.
Oh my god, it was so much nicer. But also the ability to constantly download, you know, song packs and play whatever songs, you know, I had, as opposed to the limitations of what an arcade machine may have on it, or if, you know, that mix upgrades, basing it on a hardware upgrade or an internet connection, you know, certainly inhibits that a bit.
Yeah. But again, it's digestible content. Like, again, you have to wager that off of how willing are people to buy more DLC and more song packs, too, which is another problem. You can make the best game ever, but if it's solely relying on episodic content and people don't want to buy the episode, you kind of, again, you wasted your development SOL. Time. Yeah. Yeah, your SOL. And nobody wants to buy your DLCs. Look, we're screwed.
And I mean, that's the thing, is it's, if a lot of, and that was a big criticism, I will say, with Jukebeat. The game itself came with 3 base level songs that aren't that great. It was severely reliant on DLC and song packs. You know, if you're not interested in that, and I mean, also keep in mind, and I'll say this as someone who had to learn how to play the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily the easy. You could figure it out, but there was a learning curve on it. It wasn't something that where they give you a tutorial that teaches you really how it works. I mean, you had to kind of figure it out as you went.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Again, it's all about it's like, again, it's relevance. If you put an IP out there, will a person see and go, oh, I want to play this?
Yeah.
Or will they be like, I'll pass? I mean, one thing that did come to mind, I'll just say this one thing, I'll let you get to your point. Imagine if Konami was able to make a mobile version of Silent Hill that took place in the asylum, but they made it kind of like Five Nights at Freddy's. That could work.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely could work.
I mean, there's even been shows of games using alternate reality features or augmented reality where they take your phone's camera and do goofy shit with it.
Yeah.
I mean, Silent Hill's the perfect franchise to mess with that kind of thing.
It really is. You go to certain coordinates and shit just goes crazy on you. That would be pretty cool. Or it changes how it actually can read light filters. So if you're playing in the light or you're playing in the dark, it changes dynamically. There's a bunch of cool stuff that you could do. But again, it's a matter of, will the people that are used to playing it with a controller and a console in a dark room, will they be willing to jump over? Or would they have to market it to an entirely new... That's the other big thing. If you have to market it to an entirely new set group of people, would you alienate the entire fan base that's been paying your bills for the entire time in doing so?
Oh, yeah.
That's another huge problem. I mean, but luckily, I don't have to deal with that.
It's a risk, and admittedly, with the mobile platform, it's a very expensive one, and not always one you want to spend. Again, yeah. The big thing with a mobile gaming is it's, you know, it's quick consumption. It's easily digestible.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't – you're lucky. You are like a lottery ticket, Powerball lucky, if you find a game that has a huge life cycle on the mobile platform.
Yeah. That was one of the reasons why, like I know some people who dev games and stuff, and that's like one of the things that keeps them constantly going back to the drawing board, like the certain dev showcases. You have this thing that exists, and you try to make it into another thing, and people are like, nope, we don't like it. We don't like this at all.
I mean, it also goes into a different thing. You know, when you look at the mobile platform, do you want to make something original, or do you want to make something that you know will sell?
Yeah. That's basically the point I was getting. Like, again, if you can – Nintendo's big thing is just it's the same idea, but it's a different company. With Nintendo making their NX platform, and if it was to function on Android, with all of the versions of Mario that are already out, and to be fair, that are already, like, ROM hacked to work on OSs, all they have to do is license those from the people or sue them, take those licenses, and, yeah, you can make a Mario game that functions on a screen, or you can make an entirely new IP. Nintendo's been doing that for years just from going from the console to their own handhelds. It wouldn't be a hard thing to do for them because a lot of their stuff just fits that way. But again, with a company like Konami that, again, Metal Gear Solid, you can take anywhere from 5 to 40 hours to beat it. Could you make a smaller, digestible mobile version of that game that actually works for everybody, from hardcore gamers that are used to playing it on a console to new people to the like series that are just playing it for the first time on their phone or their tablet? That's another, like I said, this is a tricky balancing act. Can you make the people that have been paying for it this entire time in one way be willing to try it in a completely new way?
Yeah.
Is another kind of slippery slope. But I hate to say it, if any company could do it, it's been proven it's Nintendo and Sega. And then Konami, again, with not having anything besides like the Bimani games and some of the rail shooters. Especially because now I think of it, I can't even think of any other big franchise that they've released in the past couple years on consoles outside of Silent Hill and then Metal Gear Solid. That's it.
I mean, nonetheless, if Konami can survive off their mobile platform and really pull themselves out of whatever dregs they might be in,
yeah,
kudos to them.
Game-changing.
I mean, at that point, who am I to criticize?
I mean, then that really would be game changer too.
Yeah, but I mean, then that shows you a completely new issue, the shift of where gaming is going, which has been a long debated topic for a couple of years now because of the advent of the mobile platform.
Yeah.
But I mean, that, I would say that is a discussion for another time.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, I mean, like with the whole advent of Chrome and the Android stuff, like, because they've even tried making a couple different Chrome consoles, like Ouya and a few other things, and they kind of work and they kind of don't. The problem is, this is another thing, is if you give everybody access to your platform to develop on, they can start making their own shit, which is the other problem with it. It's like, oh man, come to it. Let's say you license out some of your games to be bought, right?
Yeah.
I buy it. I program a game using your capital and it fails. Just imagine that. Imagine how much money they stand to lose. Like, if somebody licenses it, pitches it, they make the mobile game, and just completely flops. That's scary.
Yes.
Because then we'd be out of Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill forever. Forever. That just makes me sad.
Forever.
Oh my God!
Shout outs to Rocky Romero, No Remorse Core. Nonetheless.
Yeah.
So, moving on. This is what I'm excited about. You know this. Every time you ever send me a message on Facebook or on Skype, you know what I'm playing. I'm playing Final Fantasy 14. I can't unhinge myself from the game. It's too fucking good. It's not fair. It's hacks.
It's hacks.
It's hacks. Square Enix is hacking hard. the game's really good. And this month, on officially the 23rd, but early access the 19th, Heavensward, however you want to pronounce it.
Heavensward?
Yep, Heavensward, the official expansion pack for Final Fantasy XIV releases their first big expansion. I have talked about this before when it got announced. The level cap got raised to 60, three new classes, new raid
fat chocobos.
Oh, there was already fat chocobos.
Oh, that was a newer thing they were messing with me about the other day.
No, there's always been fat chocobos. New raid dungeon, certainly new primals. I'm hyped. I can't. I'm like just counting down. I am losing my mind over it.
You have a problem.
It's a good game. Like when I told you that the game, I once described a lot of the stuff they were doing, how it almost seemed reminiscent of when WoW did Burning Crusade.
Yeah.
That's
a bold claim.
It is a bold claim. The game has, by the way, the expansion has not come out yet. In 10 days, I could be eating crow. This could be awful.
It could be awful.
Oh, there's a very good chance that it could be awful, and I could look like an ass here. However,
you already look like an ass, so you're okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already covered there.
Yeah.
But no, I'm very excited for it. The anticipation is killing me. I cannot wait. It just, everything looks pretty. You know, I've already gotten the pre-order. I would love to have all for pre-release so I could get my, just sink my teeth in on it. But I know that's a
bit. I'm surprised you don't. I'm surprised you actually don't. Not going to lie.
You know what? Because I'm an adult and I have a day job and I want to go to Vegas next month.
But see, your money's, don't blame it on that. You already spent your monies.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
It's called, I have to be responsible and make sure I have money to support my horrible, horrible Evo / gambling addiction.
You don't have a gambling addiction, Thomas,
Shh.
Though.
Hi, Thomas. We love you, Thomas. Buddy.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean,
in all seriousness, this is me. Look, I will never shill anything on this podcast if I were not willing to stand by it. So I'm telling you now, if you are looking for an MMO to hop on, you are tired of WoW, and after 10 years, I don't blame you, come to 14. It's good. It is worth the money. It plays solid. It's fun. The community's nice. Shout outs to Baomong.
I think the community's just as bad as every other one, but that's just me.
Hey, that's I'm the hate. One who plays on, I think, in the past two... Let me put it this way. In the past 2 years that I have played, I've had a phenomenal time. I played the game on PS3 in the end of summer of 2013. We are now at the beginning of summer of 2015. I'm still playing it. I still enjoy the content. The story has been phenomenal. A lot of their patches that have added in content for the game, they've not been like stupid filler patches. They've just been, there's been a lot of content. Like at least every 6 to 8 weeks, there is something that this game is trying to give you.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, my first MMO that I ever played was Ultima Online. My first foray into what I would call modern MMO gaming was Star Wars The Old Republic. And I liked Star Wars The Old Republic. I met a lot of good people from that game, people that I play 14 with, surprisingly enough. But SWTOR, to me, was a lot of wasted potential. And I stand by that. I don't feel that way with 14. I feel like that when you have a subscription-based game, you want to feel like that the money you're putting out is justified. You want to feel like you are justified with the money that you're spending because you are paying monthly for a game. And I used to be very big on that. That was part of my reason that I would not play WoW for the longest time. Was straight up, I feel that if I'm already paying $50 for the game and then you're going to ask for a subscription on top of, you better be giving me the fucking world and then some.
Too bad you didn't play in BC or Lich King or Kata or Mop when we wanted you to play, douche. Wow. Back when it was worth it.
I mean, you know, depending on who you ask, they could say that BC and Lich King were the prime times to play.
Yeah, I guess. I can almost see that. It depends on what you want to do. But anyway, back to your thing.
I got into MMOs and SWTOR, and I liked SWTOR. SWTOR was a fun time for me, and I will never... I cannot bash SWTOR for that. I cannot bash SWTOR for the people I met. I will never bash it for the community of players.
Dear God, it's like pulling teeth to get new content in that game, though. From what I understand.
Their game went free to play in less than a year.
Yeah.
When your game, when you're an MMO and you go free play or free to play, you might make more money on the free to play side. I'm not going to say you won't, but the focus of the game is going to change.
Yeah.
Because SWTOR at that point was no longer interested with putting out a whole lot of, like, meaty content. It was a lot of their microtransaction content.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about the game at the end of it all. And it's just, I couldn't do that to myself. I'm sorry. That is,
I mean, it's justified, because again, if you're paying $15 a month, you want it to be brand new content. You want it to be like, eh, here's some stuff that we could have put in, but since we're going free to play, we'll give it to you for $5.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
No. And, you know, that was, you know, that was, you know, my big issue with SWTOR. I'm not getting that issue with Final Fantasy XIV. Final Fantasy XIV has always felt like they have justified the money that I am giving them. And I mean, they have their little, they have a couple of minor microtransaction things where you can spend money and get like a new mount or something.
Yeah.
That, you know, isn't in the game, that, you know, you, is difficult to access within the game, if not, not accessible to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a thing for a while, though, in MMOs. So, I mean, I could deal with it. I totally can, because there's things like that I'm looking at right now in WoW. It's like, oh, if you give me $20, we'll give you this mount. You can't get any other way.
Yeah, but they're actually putting out meaty, legitimate, justifiable content for the price that's being spent. And I'm liking that, and the fact that they have not betrayed me on that one, the fact that they have made a game that's worth playing, you know what, because of that, I have to be honest and say that I want Heaven's Sword to succeed. I hope that Heaven's Sword is phenomenal. It's looking to be. You know, I just,
I mean, yeah. I'm actually going to give it a shot. And if I don't like it, I'm going to punch you in the junk.
Well, since you're a big black man and I'm a tiny white guy, I hope it's great, because I don't want to get punched in the junk.
Yeah, you're going to have prosthetic balls. Just imagine that. Imagine that. Yeah. That'd be like the ultimate insult. Like, they just give you two little, like, silicone things. Like, here, put these in there. It'll feel the same. So, yeah, like, I really want to give it a shot, because I've looked at a lot of it, like, even babbling about, or I heard when I was, like, in your team speak, and it does look like a lot of fun. A lot of fun. But at the same time, too, like, it's a, no, I can't even say that, but coming from, just as a, not really play a devil's advocate, but if you're coming into this game as a seasoned or embittered, like a MMO player, on the surface, it kind of looks similar to a few things mashed together, but at the same time, it looks new and actually exciting. Like Jesse said, if you've been playing WoW for like 10 years, I've been playing for like almost 9. And it actually does look different enough that I'd give it a shot. Like, I turned down playing Star Wars with you guys. I turned down playing WildStar with some other people. But this actually looks different enough that I'd give it a shot.
I mean, if nothing else, the game feels like a Final Fantasy. That is something I couldn't even say about 13. 13 was a single-player experience and put out two direct sequels. And that never felt like a Final Fantasy to me, but 14 did.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. I mean, again, that's what we were talking about a few minutes ago, is if you're going to put out something that's different, it has to be similar enough to what it's based off of for people who are fans of it to want to try it. And that was a big problem with 13, is unless you played with it like an actual fight, you could turn on auto and just win every battle and never have to do anything, never have to heal, or you could try to play like a normal Final Fantasy, but it was just like, ugh, why even bother? This one, actually, like, you're right, it looks like, and it looks like it plays like a Final Fantasy, which is what you have to do to get people through the gate. It's like, oh man, you want to fight Bahamut?
You know what? Funny enough, by the way, this is me publicly revealing it. If my static hears this, they'll have my throat slit. I did. Their last big content, or their big raid content, was the Final Coil of Bahamut. Turns 9 through 13, or turns 10 through 13, pardon me. 10 through 13. Where at the end of 13, you fight Bahamut in what I would consider to be a very epic raid battle. And I punched Bahamut in the butt and beat him. I have the pants to prove it.
You punched him in the butt, you have his pants?
I have the Bahamut to prove it. And depending on what class we want to talk about, the chest piece as well, but that's beside the point.
What? Yeah, kind of. I mean, that's just every MMO, like, yep. raid tier tokens and whatnot, but it looks different enough where, like I said, me been having playing WoW for almost 9 years, I'm willing to give something new-ish a shot just to see, like, how different it is, because it looks like something I would like, which is another thing. Aesthetics, it looks like Final Fantasy. It's like kind of like some. It looks like a combination to me of Evolice and Final Fantasy IV.
Yep.
If you've made it in like good high end graphics, what it reminds me of, which are two of my favorite Final Fantasy, so or Final Fantasy worlds to play in. So I'm down. I'm way down. Is the Bomb Queen in it? Are the bombs in it?
I'm sorry.
Are the bombs in it?
Yep. Bombs are in 14.
Okay. I'm in.
Well,
I'm all in.
And you know what? When you come in, I'll be there to join you again. Come to Baomung.
You're ready to level from one.
Baomung. All right, moving on. Our last thing, James, I believe this one is all you here. Resident Evil Zero HD Remake.
Woo, they finally put a debut trailer, and I was like, too little, too late. Literally, that was my immediate reaction. I was like, why not just release Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil Zero in HD as a bundle? Why release them separately at a discounted price? Why? That's just like a personal gripe of mine. Like, it looks amazing, and I really can't wait to play it. Because like I said before with the little review I did with you for the remake of the first game, like, they actually have it where it has full-on 3D controls like Resident Evil 6. It has some updated areas. Well, there's not really much known about it. Looks like it has some updated areas in the 4.3 and 16.9 widescreen ratios. And, yeah, that's all we know so far. Oh, and it has a target partner zapping system again. And I'm really hyped about this just because, as you may have heard if you heard any of our other episodes, or this is your first one, two of my favorite genres, or I guess one of my top five favorite genres, top three favorite genres is survival horror. And I bounce back and forth between whether or not Resident Evil or Silent Hill is my favorite game in said crazy-ass genre. This one actually is one of my favorites because of the whole partner zapping thing. This one also creates a shitload of plot holes. So if you're a lore whore like I am, just play the game and look at the pretty visuals and ignore why some things are there and some things aren't there and why they're leeches and not zombies and where the Crimson Heads went to. There's just a bunch of this weirdness, but overall it is amazing. Completely amazing. Would you give it a shot, Jesse, if I bought it for you?
You know what, if you sit me down in front of Resident Evil Resident Evil Zero HD, you know what, yeah, I would. I would. You know, it's not a game I'm good at. I would probably suck at it.
We can put it on easy for that. I mean, like, okay, so just so you guys know, if you haven't played it before, I'm going to spoil the hell out of it. You've had, like, 13 years to play it, so sucks to be you. Resident Evil Zero takes place literal hours before Resident Evil 1 with one of the side characters from Resident Evil 1, and you make it from Raccoon Forest to Raccoon City. And then back to the mansion in Raccoon Forest, supposedly in less than 2 hours, which I'm still like, what? How is this even possible? Because you play as Rebecca Chambers, who is like the secondary character in Chris's storyline. You veer off from the rest of the group. You come upon this train. You find this prisoner. And you and him go on this wacky adventure with all kinds of shit that you didn't even know existed in the Marvel universe. Or in the Marvel. Oh, my God.
Close enough.
Yeah, you didn't even know existed in the Resident Evil universe, like giant frogs,
yeah,
leech monsters, zombie, giant centipedes, zombie chimpanzees, but they're albino chimpanzees for some reason.
Yeah,
never understood it, but man, they lost their mind when they made this one. It's a great game. It's looking like it's going to be like $20, like Resident Evil HD remake. And if you haven't played it, give it a shot. Give it a shot. A crazy-ass shot. It might suck, and if it sucks, I'm really sorry. I'm horribly
sorry.
Well,
if Heaven's Sword sucks, I'm sorry, so we'll be
dead even. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in the game. It's pretty good, but again, it creates some really weird continuity issues. But give it a shot. You might like it. You just might like it.
Well, I do believe I think that covers our... With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, actually, James, closing statement. Who do you have winning tonight, Golden State or Cleveland?
Golden State. Double, because he's the best basketball player ever. Fuck Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Steph Curry has nothing on him.
That sounded awfully robotic.
No, that's from the heart. that is from the heart.
That is lasting off again. You all have a wonderful evening.
Please don't kill me.
You gonna die, baby girl. You gonna die.